This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. I don't know if you knew this, but the Quakers were the first organized non-Native religious group in the Carolinas. In fact, the Quakers dominated the colonial government in the late 1600s. And today, the Piedmont Triad has the largest concentration of Quakers in North America. But leading up to the Civil War, Quakers left the state in big numbers because of their opposition to slavery. And then during the war, their pacifism sent them north and west. Guilford College was first established as a boarding school in 1837 to encourage Quakers to stay. Max Carter is the director of the Friends Center and campus ministry coordinator at Guilford College. He joins us now as part of our series, North Carolina Voices, the Civil War. Max, welcome.
Thanks, Frank.
Good to have you back on the show. We need a Quaker 101. Can we start with that, where Quakers began and how they came to North Carolina?
Sure. Quakerism began as a radical Christian reform movement, restorationist movement during the English Civil War period, 1640s, 1650s, sought to restore what they saw as the primitive Christian church along the lines of Jesus' ethics of love, of non-resistance, of simplicity and integrity, and began spreading into the American colonies as soon as the 1650s. Elizabeth Harris, first Quaker to the colonies we know of, into Virginia. Mary Fisher, Ann Austin, others brought it here. And there were Quakers already in the Carolinas by 1665.
And Quakers dominated the colonial government around that period, too. So there were a fair number of them here in what is now North Carolina.
Right. John Archdale was a Quaker governor for two terms in the 1680s, 1690s, majority of the assembly. First public school, Simon's Creek, 1704, was Quaker. And the yearly meeting, our association of friends in the state, was established in 1697.
Now, is it true that Duke University began as a combined Methodist and Quaker institution?
Yes, began as Union Academy over in Trinity, North Carolina. The Duke brothers, who had been educated at the Friends Boarding School to get some business acumen to turn their agricultural product into a fairly healthy business, and approached the head of the school, Braxton Craven, who's also a product of the New Garden Boarding School, with money to endow it into a college. And the Quakers on the board refused tobacco money, devil's money. They weren't going to have anything to do with it. The Methodists, having no scruples, took it. became Trinity College and later on Duke University.
This is how the trouble starts, Max.
I know that, don't you?
All right.
What are you going to do?
So now the Quakers have a good start. They have some some political authority. They've got big numbers. They're in education. But then they start to leave. What drives the Quakers out of North Carolina?
Well, initially, actually, it was Act of Parliament. They didn't want a bunch of Quakers in the colony because we don't fight.
Yeah,
and
peace
we don't pay our church tithe.
Peace is bad for business, man.
This is very bad business plan. And so they passed loyalty oaths. Quakers won't swear an oath because the Bible says, swear not at all, let your yes be yes, your no be no. So that's an effective way of getting rid of Quakers. But we stayed in large numbers. But then in the beginning of the 1800s, Quakers started leaving the South for free states because of their opposition to slavery. Quakers got involved in the first manumission and abolition societies. The Underground Railroad started in these parts as early as 1819. And so Quakers were involved in illegal activity as well as concerned that they not raise their children in a violent culture, which slavery is, as well as seeing the dark clouds of war looming on the horizon that later led to the Civil War.
And tell us a little bit more about the activity. Obviously, people are leaving in protest, but then there are those who stay and are activists. Tell us about the activism.
Well, probably the most well-known activists were folk like Levi and Vestal, Addison Coffin on the Underground Railroad. They began organizing that in the 18-teens on what's now the campus of Guilford College. The boarding school wasn't started until about two decades later, but the farmland, woodland here harbored fugitives, and then began organizing a system of getting them up to free states. Levi Coffin, who farmed what's now the Guilford College campus with his wife Katie, eventually left for Indiana in 1826, where their home became known as the Grand Central Station of the Underground Railroad. Some 2,000 to 3,000 fugitives went through their home to freedom. Others remained here involved in education, a Sabbath school to teach literacy to enslaved Africans was opened at the near the Quaker Meeting House in 1821. Others remained here and helped in various ways get folk out, even as Quakers were emptying into the free states.
You talk about building schools and educating enslaved Americans. This is subversive as well, because at a certain point that's illegal.
It was illegal, and what Quakers did was use a little bit of a ruse that pushed their testimony of integrity to the limit. They went to local slaveholders like David and Rachel Caldwell of the Presbyterian Church and said, how about on Sunday afternoons when we're not using our school building, we teach some of your enslaved Africans how to read the Bible. Of course, and the Bible was used by many slave owners to justify slavery back in the 1800s. But it was a ruse to teach them literacy.
Tell us about the Hockett brothers.
Well, the Hockett brothers were from the Center Friends Meeting community down in southern Guilford County. It's Edward R. Murrow's old meeting. Edward R. Murrow was raised in that community. So old, it's still spelled C-E-N-T-R-E. Established in the 1750s, 1760s. The Hockett brothers were pacifists, refused to be inducted into the Confederate Army during the Civil War period, and refused to pay the $500 Exemption Act tax. 1862, the legislature in North Carolina passed a tax that those who could not in conscience fight could hire a substitute, so to speak, by paying $500. They refused even that. Mm. And so they were forcibly conscripted and endured various hardships. The probably the most famous was William Hockett being lined up against the wall with a firing squad ordered to shoot, and each soldier refused.
Well, now, in general, that's the Hockett brothers, but generally, how faithful were Quakers in North Carolina to their oath of pacifism? Did many fight anyway?
Quite faithful. I have only seen record of maybe two Quakers who joined the Confederate Army, and it's hard to know whether that was of their own free will or not. Most either refused, like the Hockett brothers, Thomas Henshaw, Solomon Frazier, Tillman Vestal, and endured bayoneting, being tied to cannons, being force-marched, being trampled by horses, being faced with firing squads, a variety of things. Or they, some paid the exemption tax or worked making shoes or in the salt mines as exemption. Others went bushwhacking. The first recorded episode of Quaker cross-dressing was down in Randolph County as a Quaker farmer went bushwhacking, hid out in the hills and the woods to escape conscription, but kept an eye on his wife, who was struggling to maintain the farm, and when she was struggling with plowing or bringing in the field, the crops, would dress up as a woman and go out in the fields and help plow.
So Quakers gave us the gift of cross-dressing.
They did, and it's a tradition still alive and well at Guilford.
Well, that's fantastic. There's also a pretty impressive case, a kind of Saving Private Ryan Quaker case in the Civil War.
Yes. John Crenshaw was a notable Quaker up in Richmond, Virginia, who was often approached to help intercede with the Confederate government there in Richmond. And in 1864, in the Siege of Petersburg, he finally secured the release of two young Quakers who had been forcibly conscripted and were in the trenches as the Union Army was lobbing artillery and shells. Fierce fight. Hired a carriage and horses and drove out to the battlefield looking for them with artillery and bullets flying all around him. Couldn't find them, so left the carriage and walked through the trenches for several miles through not only a raging firefight, but also a raging storm. Still couldn't find. About 1 o'clock in the morning, decided I better give up, but then thought, what if they are killed tonight? This will be on my conscience. And so he continued, persistent, finally found them, and was able to secure their release and got them out of the trenches. And shortly after he got out, the Union Army breached the lines and killed almost everyone in the regiment.
Wow. Any idea how many Quakers were executed for their pacifism during the Civil War?
I don't know that any were executed. They were certainly lined up in front of firing squads and bayoneted, but they survived miraculously, quite often because, you know, like Solomon Frazier, Tillman Vestal, they, even while they were conscripted in the Army camps and refused to wear the uniforms or carry a musket, they would pick persimmons and cook and do that and do little odd jobs for the other soldiers and won their affection.
Was life particularly difficult for Quakers after the war because of their position on both slavery and pacifism?
Well, it was not necessarily only because of their position, but because they, too, were devastated by the state of things. For example, Delphina Mendenhall was a Quaker widow who maintained her farm during the war. And both Union soldiers and Confederate soldiers, you know, stripped it bare of everything because since she wouldn't fight or support either side, each side thought, you know, she was with the other folk. The one thing she kept was a hog that she had named Sherman because of William Tecumseh Sherman's scorched earth policy. It was a very cantankerous pig, so that was her affectionate way of jibing that Union general. And so the Union Army came through. They allowed her to keep that pig out of honor to old Sherman.
they thought it was an honor.
They did.
They didn't know.
Quakers were left devastated like everyone else. Very little left in terms of, you know, money. You know, certainly their meeting houses, their homes were devastated. There were fewer than 2,000 Quakers left in the South after the war. And so there was a devastated community.
Did Northern Quakers help out?
They did. One of the reasons that New Garden Boarding School, now Guilford College, survived through the Civil War period, the only institution, educational institution of its type to remain open clear through the war, because the young men didn't march off to war, and because Northern friends, especially from the Baltimore area, sent money and funds and aid down here, and after the war established an association that funneled well over $100,000 and many volunteers to rebuild the Southern Quaker economy, established a cooperative agricultural program, the Model Farm, before North Carolina State had cooperative extension programs, built a school system, eventually numbered some 75 schools with their own superintendent and curriculum, rebuilt meetings, and got the college endowed to become Guilford College in 1888.
And in fact, those schools played an important part in North Carolina's education system. There weren't public schools here till around 1880 or so.
Right. And in many areas, when the good legislature of the state of North Carolina, unlike, I'm not going to get political, maybe today, supported education, they finally established a state school system, and in many places simply took over the Quaker school system that was already in place.
Tell us about the founding of Guilford College.
Well, again, Guilford College was started in 1837 as a boarding school. As you know, the Quakers were leaving the state, they wanted to maintain a guarded education of those few children remaining here, and so many of the Quaker meetings didn't have the wherewithal to maintain their own little schools. The teachers had left, the families had left, so the yearly meeting, again, the Association of Quakers in the state, decided that there should be at least one place, this boarding school in the New Garden community, now incorporated in Greensboro, where they could send their children for that guarded Quaker education. And so it was, in fact, because of a Quaker's commitment to being the New South, so to speak, and opposing slavery and violence and secession, and then having to leave in large numbers, that necessitated a boarding school that then evolved into Guilford College in 1888. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here.
Well, and you are here, and you talked about the devastation that Quakers, and frankly everybody in the South, felt after the Civil War. The numbers are way down, and now we know that in the Triad we have the largest concentration of Friends in North America. Does that mean that people began moving back, or was it just that things were starting to get better for Quakers and everybody else?
It was a combination of things. First, it was the Baltimore Association sending volunteers and funds down here to help rebuild the Southern Quaker community. They led the rebuilding of the agricultural economy through establishing this model farm over near High Point, establishing schools, forming a nucleus for maintaining a Quaker community, and then realizing that their young people in the early 1870s were heading off to the Methodist revivals, those scalawag Methodists again, and enjoying the enthusiasm of Methodist worship in comparison to that staid, quiet Quaker silent worship. They were going to lose the next generation. Okay. So they adopted some innovations, allowed more music, more programmed worship, prepared sermons, and that kept the young people and led to a spiritual revival that added thousands to Quaker membership. And then in this past century and into today, a lot of Quakers are attracted, like everyone else, to North Carolina. It's the perfect state, after all. We all know this. And so many friends have come in retirement. Many friends have come to teach in the fine colleges and universities, and there are now several small Quaker schools like New Garden Friends School, Charlotte Friends School, Wilmington, Carolina Friends School, High Point Friends School that attract others. So it's a very attractive place to come for friends, and we've gathered quite a nice concentration.
And Max, it's good to have you here.
Well, good to be back on the air, Frank. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Max Carter, Director of the Friends Center and Campus Ministry Coordinator at Guilford College in Greensboro. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening to The State of Things. Our website is stateofthings.org. We're on Facebook, too. State of Things is produced by Amber Nimix and Alex Granados. We get help from Jeremy Loeb and Julia Cox. Anna Cassell is our intern. Robin Copley, the technical director. Managing editor, Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.